Why don't you recap then?
We had the barbecue on the beach.
Yes, suckling pig.
There was the naked woman in the water who disappeared.
Yeah, Barney's offshore encounter.
Yeah. Oh, when it got dark, there were all the white figures in the woods, and then Jimmy disappeared.
Oh, you missed something.
You got plonked over the head, didn't you?
Yeah.
No, you missed something else.
There was a screaming in the van. I was the only person who heard that, though, wasn't I?
That's right, the pig children.
Yeah, and the piglet slaughter.
Oh, yes.
And the human ear.
Still in my pocket, isn't it?
It's still in your pocket. It really was Andy throwing shit at the wall.
Shh, don't tell anyone. We're up for a reward.
Spoil the illusion.
You say that like there are other types of GMing.
There are ones where you actually have a plan.
Is this episode 4?
This is episode 4. But of course, I think the most dramatic moment came right at the end when Sid went back to his hotel room.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, I was surprised to hear his friend Jimmy's voice saying, don't turn on the light, Sid. Which, of course, he immediately did. And there was Jimmy, slit from gullet to groin.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And apparently self-conscious about it.
Yeah.
Well, wouldn't you be?
Well,
yes. I like the realism.
I'm not going to body shame him.
This session is not going to go well, I can tell already. So, because remember, horror. Let's get into the horror.
Oh, no. You mean we're taking it seriously. That's what you're...
Yes. So Jimmy's sitting there, and I think what I can embellish a little bit is he's just sort of holding his guts together, and you can see poking out in between, you know, in the gaps between his fingers, you can see bits of intestine and flesh just kind of poking out as if everything's about to just fall out.
So I guess I'm making that sand roll now.
I guess you are making that sanity roll. And the beautiful thing is that you are on your own. Oh, damn. Made the
sanity roll. I'm as disappointed as you are, but yes, I did pass.
I was really thinking, okay, he's about to go off on this rampage. I still think you need to roll a d4, though.
Okay, that seems entirely reasonable.
You're not going to have a bout of madness, but this is pretty awful. So, what's your involuntary reaction, then?
I think Sid's involuntary reaction is going to be to turn around, walk out of his hotel room, shut the door, and just pretend that didn't happen.
So... door closes behind you. Perhaps you don't hear this because you're trying to block it out. You hear Jimmy's voice saying, "Oh, Sid, I thought we were friends."
Yeah, Sid is wandering off because clearly he is not drunk enough.
So there is a bar downstairs in the hotel, a very small bar. It's the hotel proprietor also doubles up as the barman. And perhaps he's used to you coming down at all hours and he just kind of nods at you as you come down the stairs.
Yeah, I sit at the stage, is quite pale, and just walks over silently towards the bar and sits down at the bar. And yeah, he doesn't order, he's just staring down at the bar quietly.
The barman, the hotel concierge proprietor, he has many roles. Perhaps he's cleaning out a glass with a slightly grimy cloth. He looks at you and then he turns around and reaches for the strongest bottle on the highest shelf, pulls it down, pours out a very large measure and just slides it over to you.
Yeah, and Sid just necks it straight down.
Wonderful. Now, the rest of you, if I can remember right, you're all heading back to your various places of residence. So I suppose Jack is going back to his little shack.
Yeah.
What does Jack have, a farmhouse? Where does Jack live?
I think it's pretty simple, but I reckon he's got a little plot or something. You know, maybe he managed to persuade someone to part with a corner of an old olive grove or a little vineyard or something. He's kind of slowly renovating, you know, building up. He's got a little shack that he kind of builds onto, improves a little bit each season.
All right. So when you get back to your plot, little, you see something a bit strange. There's a very dark, obviously. You don't have any electric lights, certainly on the outside. Maybe on the inside. I don't know whether you've got electricity or running water in this plot, but
yeah, it's just very simple.
There's someone in your grove, in your corner of the grove. There's a person sort of hunched down or maybe kneeling or something by one of the oldest olive trees. You've got one of the olive trees in this grove. It's ancient. It must be hundreds of years old. It's one of these very gnarled, stunted, thick ones. And there's someone just sort of kneeling down by it, facing the trunk.
How about this? I reckon that I keep a torch by the door. So I'd like to just keep an eye on this figure and go over to my torch on windowsill or something like that and then shine it on them.
Can't quite make out. It's clearly a man, a male figure. I'm not quite sure. Can't really see any distinguishing features from this distance from the back. But he seems to be digging in the soil with his hands, scraping away the soil at the bottom of this olive tree.
And doesn't bat an eyelid at the torchlight.
No, didn't react, didn't alter his actions, just continues to scrape away. And the soil, as you know, is very stony and dry and hard. It must be very painful to try and scrape it away with your hands like that.
I think I just slowly move over to the door and open the door whilst, you know, keeping the torch on the person, keeping my eyes on the person. And my toolbox that I had earlier on today, I think, is just inside the door. I think I'm going to get the hammer out. Yeah?
Okay. Yeah, you got the hammer.
Okay, and then I'm going to call out, oi!
For a moment, it looks like the man is just going to ignore you and keep digging. Probably scrapes away a couple more times and then stops as if he's finally realised that there's someone there. And then he stands up, turns around, and you see that it's Feet. And he says, hello, Jack.
Hi, hello, Feet.
Yeah.
What's Feet wearing, just out of interest, please, Andy?
He's wearing his normal multicoloured sort of
smock.
No, trousers. Like, I guess, sort of maybe Indian-style trousers with a drawstring, you know, around the waist, sandals. On his top, he's wearing his cheesecloth smock, and it's absolutely pristine clean now. He's obviously had it cleaned. And, yeah, he looks at you and says, yeah, man, I reckon something buried around here.
What makes you think that, Feet?
I think I smelt it. I got my antenna out, you know?
Yeah. You smell through your antenna.
Ah, you know what I mean. Antenna to the cosmos, man.
Have you found it yet?
I haven't, but I reckon it must be round here somewhere. Got a very strong pong about it.
What does it smell like?
Oh, it's hard to describe. But you'd know it if you smelt it, Jack.
You can't think of anything to compare it to.
Well, I don't know. Maybe a bit like a mushroom or something. Like a very strong, like mushroomy smell. Like shrooms, man.
Okay. I was just go to sleep because it's, I don't know, it's about 3 o'clock in the morning, I think, probably.
That's the best time to find them, I think.
And they're especially here.
Yeah. That's what they told me. It's all right. Look, if I find it, I'll bring it in for you, yeah? Just put it by your bed.
You can leave it on the wall over there. You don't have to bring it in.
No, you see, they got to be close.
I'll look at it in the morning.
All right. Yeah, whatever, man. I'm easy.
Who told you they're here? This stuff, the fungus.
It smells like a mushroom.
Who told you? Whatever it is.
A funny thing, Jack. I can't remember.
I think you should go home.
In a bit.
Now.
All right. I thought we were friends, Jack.
We are. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. This is my home. You're digging under my olive tree, and you're not making a lot of sense.
They said that they like being near olive trees, especially the old ones. Anyway.
Why don't you go and look for them to your lovely... You've got a lovely garden.
All right, Jack. But no need to bring me down like this, man. I mean...
I'm sending you off. I'm not bringing you down. I'm sending you off. There's a difference.
All right. Peace and love.
Peace and love, yeah. Why don't you come back tomorrow?
Tomorrow. Yeah, I will.
Come in the early evening so we get spend a bit of time digging.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, I'll see you. They won't be very happy, though. Just thought I'd tell you.
Who?
You know, it's all right. You'll find out. And then he goes.
I'm going to stand on the wall watching him go. I'm going to let him go as far as it's possible for him to go. And then I'll slowly go into my house.
Very late. You must be very tired after your incredibly long day with starting off, I suppose, with your friend Beat dying and now ending up with him digging underneath your olive tree.
I tell you, I wish I had a lock on my door.
You might have a heavy wardrobe or something.
Yeah, I think I might do that, actually, yeah.
You're a carpenter, you can nail your door shut.
I think I might do that, actually, yeah.
Yeah, so we will play out the climactic scene from Straw Dogs. Right, okay, well, we'll leave Jack there with that perplexing encounter.
I'm not sure how good a night's sleep I really get, but...
Yeah, probably not. Maybe you hear some things in the night as well, but, yeah, don't help either. Maybe you hear the sounds of scratching. But anyway, Trey. Now, Trey, hasn't your boat taken your man off to get his arm?
No, you keep suggesting that's the case, but it's not. You want rid of the boat, I understand, but no, the boat is still moored.
Okay, you're staying on the boat.
That's an interesting question, because I'm not sure how favorable I would be to getting back in the Zodiac little dinghy that takes us back to the boat at this point, being that there's some sort of killer mermaid on the loose or some sort of other fairy creature. Perhaps I've asked for accommodations on the island itself, but I'm not sure how much traction we will get in securing such bedding this late at night. So I think I've probably turned that over to my team to organize.
You can just make a credit rating roll, which I think would be impossible to fail at this.
Trying, hold on.
Blimey. Credit rating of 99. I don't actually think you're allowed to give yourself a credit rating of 99 by the rules.
I didn't think I had one, but maybe I guess so.
No, you are. I think, like, by the rules, it's meant to be determined by your profession, isn't it, Scott?
Yeah, there's a band that is determined by your profession.
Oh, yes.
But anyway...
He's hardly breaking the fucking system, is he?
No, I know.
And fundamentally, there's not that much difference between, say, a 90 credit rating and 99.
That's true. But given the fact that you're an oil baron, or whatever it is you are, I think 99 is perfectly reasonable. All right, so, of course, a man of your means, you can more or less commandeer any house on the island with that role. So what I'll say is that there is a Moorish-like palace that's a little bit run down. No one has... It hasn't been kept in particularly good condition, but there is an ancient Moorish palace up on one of the bluffs overlooking the bay. And the local mayor, maybe you've made some kind of arrangement with him, and they have made it perfectly habitable for your visit. So you're basically staying in a incredibly beautiful and ornate Islamic palace.
And this is the exact kind of thing that happens when I leave the accommodations up to Meredith. She wants to be very grandiose, and I think she does it for her own benefit. Honestly, I would go for much more Spartan, pragmatic environs, but this ends up happening every time. I should come to expect it, and especially since my alter ego at this point is a little bit incapacitated mentally and is still carrying a child's ear in his pocket, this probably goes down exactly as Meredith intends it to happen.
Yes, indeed. You, of course, have been given the Sultan's bedchamber. That's where you will be sleeping. Although this place is incredibly beautiful, it's quite austere as well because there's no fittings or furniture. It has some ancient sort of reflecting pools out in the garden and these amazing geometrically arranged grounds and arches and the intricate tile work and marble flooring is amazing. But it is actually kind of weirdly Spartan because you've also got these camp beds and things to sleep on because obviously there's no furniture in there. But your room has been made up. There's some tallow candles burning in these candle stands and your camp bed is there set up with some blankets and sheets and the bedside, a small crate next to the bed with your nightcap. Obviously, what is it that you drink just before bed?
Warm milk, generally.
Okay, yeah, so you have a little jug of warm milk by the side. So, Meredith, as per usual, comes in to have the final meeting of the day with you. Remind me where Meredith is. Where's she from? She's French.
Meredith is an American. Meredith Jenkins.
And she comes in. She's always very businesslike. And she has her list of objectives for the week, for the day, for the week, for the entire trip. And she says, "Sir, I'm a little bit concerned about events of today. Would you care to give me any updated instructions or objectives that we can set? I feel like we have somewhat gone off course."
Meredith, I think we need to really have an appraisal of what on course actually means. I think we need to subject ourselves more to the will of the island. Do you understand what I'm saying, Meredith?
Not entirely, sir.
There's a flow here that you have to get a true feeling for. We need to embed ourselves into this world, this little strange world. Our new friends, they're all important in their own ways. We've been spinning our wheels, going round and round, doing the same thing, island to island, first the Caribbean and the Red Sea. I mean, just nothing. We found nothing. And the way we're going to find something, the way we're going to make this work, we're going to embrace the flow and will of the natural energies of the Mediterranean. And by that, I mean, first and foremost, tomorrow, I need you to hire that carpenter. He needs to be our carpenter. The film crew gentlemen. See what we can do to fund their next film. Get them to get their equipment, and let's just start filming everything. I want to film everything. And also, we need to have a funeral for a small ear.
About that ear, sir, would you mind if I just take it away? It's not entirely hygienic to keep a severed ear about your person.
Yes, would you find a proper box for it? And also, the gentleman with the pool, I like his... something about him. He's got an energy. Offer him some sort of position. I don't know. Make something up.
Okay. Let's have this conversation again in the morning, after good night's sleep.
No, just take it down now, and then brief me on when it's completed in the morning. I'm going to close my eyes and remove the ear from my pocket carefully and hand it to you. I do not want to see it before it goes in its box again. Please put this in the box.
Should I put it on ice, perhaps, sir?
No, that would be quite unnatural. This is the Mediterranean. It needs to bask in its own environment.
Right. Don't you think it might go a bit off, sir? We don't put it on ice?
Find a proper box and everything will be all right.
Okay. I tell you what, I'm not going to touch it myself, but I have a handkerchief here. Maybe you can put it in the handkerchief and we can just wrap it up. Yes?
Fair enough. Like a shroud. Tiny ear shroud.
She's looking with great deal of concern at you at this point, and she very quickly wraps up the ear, twists it a couple of times, and just holds it at arm's length, just dangling, and she says, "Good night, sir. Please try to get a good night's sleep. I think you might have been under some strain recently."
Oh, Meredith, we're always all under strain. But everything always turns out for the best, doesn't it?
I hope so. And then she turns smartly on her heel and walks out. There's no door, there's just an archway, a beautiful Islamic archway, and she just disappears down the hallway, and you hear her heels echoing down the marble passageway as she retreats. And then you're left with your thoughts sitting on your camp bed, and I'd like you to make a power roll. Ooh!
Oh, heavens no.
That is a 93. So, you fall asleep relatively quickly, and you have a very vivid dream that night. You dream that it doesn't initially feel like a dream because you wake up in the morning, you go into the bathroom, and you're a bit bleary-eyed. Perhaps you had a few drinks the night before, so you're a bit bleary-eyed. You splash water in your face. And when you look in the mirror, both your ears are pig ears. And you're absolutely horrified, and you're kind of, you can't have pig ears. And so you just reach up and you basically just rip both the ears off your head. Incredible pain shoots through your head as you tear off these foul mutated ears, and blood immediately starts gushing out of the holes in the side of your head, running down your collar, running down your shirt. You're screaming with pain as your beautiful pajamas drenched in deep thick red blood, and the sound of your screaming brings Meredith to your room, and she just sees you there standing in front of the mirror, just sight of absolute carnage, blood gushing down your chest and back. And she just comes up behind you, just reaches her arms around you, and just starts slowly unbuttoning your pajama top, takes it off, and she says, "Don't worry, sir, we'll get this all cleaned up, no problem," and just walks off holding this blood-sodden pajama top. Yeah, and then you wake up.
I believe Trey would immediately reach for his ears and go to the mirror and make sure everything is where it should be, as it should be, and then survey his self, assuming no actual blood has stained my clothing, and my smart pajama top stays buttoned and well-tended.
Yeah, your pajamas are beautifully clean. Maybe a little bit of sweat under the armpits from your night terrors, and you can take a point of sanity loss for passing. No more than that.
I don't like the way certain aspects of my mental health are going at the moment. And Trey is talking to himself in the mirror, pulls down the bags of flesh under his eyes and looks at the whites. I really felt that if I ever had a dream with Meredith unbuttoning my shirt, it would have ended quite differently. So much disappointment.
She's all business. Meredith is all business.
As we all are.
Right. Now, I feel like we don't really know what to call you anymore, do we? But we'll call you Ray.
You know what to call me.
I know what to call So, Ray.
Yes.
You get home very late, and the house is dark when you get back. And
just thinking that I'm probably a little spooked after the events of the evening, and I've been walking home, probably carrying a sizable branch and walking in a manner to which, you know, to give out a vibe that I'm not to be messed with, even though I've, yeah, inside I'm a little spooked.
Yeah, and you can't help but feel incredibly pissed off every time you walk past that big muddy hole in the ground. Yeah, that obviously Angie's asleep, the lights are all off. Go into the house. You can you make me a spot hidden as you're going into the house?
Sorry, just a second.
Yeah, no, everything seems fine. And yeah, you go in. Obviously, you don't want to. You're trying to be as quiet as possible. You don't want to wake Angie. No. What's your bedtime ritual, Ray?
Well, I might do. I'll go and go in to the drinks cabinet. Probably have just a little sit and pour myself a little whiskey, a little cheeky, I don't know, a Macallan or something. Something nice. And
a Drambuie. You pour yourself a Drambuie.
No, I save that for when my son comes over. I'll just sit there kind of swirling it around in my glass and just contemplate the crazy events of the evening.
Mm. And as you're sitting there contemplating, thinking about all that stuff, you know, thinking about the naked woman swimming off on that island, the awful slaughter of the piglets, the disappearance of Jimmy and Sid, and those white garbed figures hiding, lurking in the woods, and of course that scream coming from the back of that butcher's truck as they headed back. You're mulling it over, and something suddenly clicks. You don't know how you didn't realize it before. There's something about the tone of that scream, the pitch of that scream, that was very familiar to you. It was that time, wasn't it, when she saw a rat and let out a scream. That was Angie's scream.
Angie. I stop swishing my drink around, and I get up and go and check that she is still in bed.
Go in. Bed still made. She's not there.
Fuck it. I start kind of rushing around the house, looking for any signs of anyone broken in or anything like that. Angie! Angie!
Just dead silence. And this time when you go back and you see that one of the side windows is just kind of like popped open, been forced open. The wood around the latch is all splintered.
Fuck me. Right. Someone's going to get it. I'm just wondering if I've got a weapon in the bedroom somewhere. Gun, possibly?
Oh, you got a shooter. Of course you got a shooter.
Yeah. Right. So I grab a pistol, I guess. It'll be like, I don't know.
Sawn off, maybe?
Oh, it could do. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean business. Yeah. I grabbed a sawn off and I run round the outside of the house to where I can see the exit was made.
Mm.
And can I see a sign of any, I don't know, just any tracks or anything trailing off?
Well, make a luck roll, I think. Mm. No, you spend a good 10 minutes just frantically running up and down, looking on the ground, looking at the window ledge, the door. No, whoever did this knew what they were doing. There's no sign of struggle. The only sign was that forced window. You're probably like perplexed. Like Angie would put up a fight for sure, wouldn't she?
Yeah, she's no pushover. I'm just going to be Angie! Just going to keep calling out into the darkness, I think. I'm not going to rest. Maybe head off in the direction. I just assume that she's gone. I'm going to head off directly from you know, wherever the debris is.
We will leave Ray Maton there, screaming out the name of his wife with his sawn-off shotgun, in his hand, looking like someone's going to pay. Yeah. How long do you spend drinking in the bar then, Sid?
I think Sid is going to get blackout drunk. Well, maybe not blackout drunk, but certainly to the kind of stage where he is chemically shutting down as much of his fear, his emotions, his memory of what he saw upstairs as he can. And it's got to the stage where when he decides it's time to make his way back upstairs, he's only really doing so by holding onto the wall on his way there for security.
Yeah. Do you believe what you saw? Are you imagining that it was just a hallucination or that you really saw it?
I think by this stage, Sid's managed to rationalise that it's been a weird day, a lot of weird shit has happened, he's had a blow to the head, and clearly he must have just imagined all that.
Yeah. I think you almost convince yourself of that. And of course, one, no way someone could live with that kind of a wound. Certainly they wouldn't be just speaking to you. There must have just been, I don't know what it must have been. The events of the day just seem to all be compounding into some kind of...
Some kind of hallucination.
All the more surprising when you go back into your room and Jimmy's still sitting there.
Well, of course he fucking is.
And he looks up and he says, "Fucking hell, Sid, I thought you were going to leave me hanging here all night."
"You're not there, Jimmy."
"It's all right, just sit down, Sid."
And Sid's got to stagger through to the ensuite and start vomiting.
And Jimmy says, "If I write down the number of times I've heard you doing that, my old mucker." "Oh, bloody hell, Sid. I tell you what, Sid, the fucking funny old world."
Yeah, Sid answers this with another bout of retching.
"Look, I know this is hard to, you know, wrap your noggin round, but look, let's just accept that this is what has happened, all right? I'm here, guts hanging out. Well, not really hanging out, I'm hanging on to my guts. If I stood up, I reckon everything would go, it'll be on the floor. But I'm just going to stay here, all right, Sid? Is that all right?"
Yeah, at this stage, I mean, Sid has finished puking. He's wiped the worst of it away and spilled his mouth out with water and is standing there in the doorway of the bathroom just holding on to the door frame for dear life.
And Jimmy says, "I thought you had more gumption, Sid."
"You're not fucking there, Jimmy. You're not there."
"All right, okay. Look, if it's easier, let's pretend I'm not here and that you're imagining all this. But at least you hear me out. Hear me out, Sid, yeah?"
"What the fuck's going on?"
"Look, don't wish to sort of freak you out or anything, but..."
"It's a bit fucking late for that, isn't it?"
I know. "The problem is, we're all fucked, Sid. We're all completely fucked."
"What happened to you, Jimmy? What happened to you? You were there in the woods, those geezers in white. Someone hit me and then... What happened to you?"
"Yeah. You see, they got me. Well, they took me off to see the boss, you see. The boss doesn't like people interfering... the stuff they're doing."
"You're not making any fucking sense, Jim."
"It's a bit hard to explain, really, but..."
"Harder to explain than why you're sitting on my bed with your guts hanging out."
"Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because like, we spend..."
"No, it's not fucking funny."
And he laughs, and when he laughs, there's a bit of arterial spray from between his fingers. "So, oh, I shouldn't do that, should I?" "That's not very good, is it?" "No. But no, it's funny though. It is funny because we spend our whole lives making this stuff, like making it, filming it, and here we are. Life imitating art, eh?"
"Yeah. I'd known earlier you could do that. We could have saved ourselves a fucking fortune on special effects."
"See, that's the old Sid I knew."
Sid at this stage is now just sitting on the bedroom floor with his back to the wall, trying not to look at Jimmy.
And Jimmy says, "Yeah, you see, she said it's for the best."
"Who's she? Is she the boss?"
"Yeah, she's the boss."
"So the boss is a bird?"
"Guess you could call her that. Not exactly pretty."
"Well, I don't know what the fuck I'd call her. You're the one who's met her."
"Yeah, I guess you would classify her as a bird in the broadest sense of the word. Yeah, why not? So she said, I had to come back like this to just to make it really clear to you that you're fucked.
I don't mean to be rude, Jimmy, but one of us has still got our guts on the inside. Are you sure that it's me who's fucked?
Oh, no, I'm finished. Yeah, obviously, I'm no way forward for me, as it were, Sid. But, no, she's got this strange, I don't know, you could call it a sense of humour.
All right. What's the joke then, mate? What's the fucking punchline to all this?
Punchline? I think this is like one of them ones that doesn't really have a punchline. Just goes on a bit.
Fucking hate jokes like that.
Yeah. I think it's just one of those ones that you got to see the humour in it, you know? Got to look for the humour in it, Sid.
Other than telling me that I'm fucked, what does this bird want?
They want to do something with you. I don't know. It's a bit fucking confusing. But apparently each of you has got something that she wants. I don't know. It's all a bit beyond me.
Talent, boyish good looks, what?
Yeah, if only, eh? Yeah, no. No, I think she needs like a piece of you. You know what I mean? But look, you'll find out. It'll all become clear of it in no time. But look, I tell you what. I think best if you just lie down on your bed and turn away for a minute or two. Yeah?
Yeah.
You don't want to see this.
I mean, Sid tries to stand up and he's pushing himself up against the wall and just failing to get up. And just eventually goes, fuck it, and curls up on the ground and closes his eyes.
Yeah, keep them closed. And then you hear this sort of grunt and then this slippery liquid sound. And he goes, what? Hey, you all. Got it. All right. Look, Sid, you might see me again. I don't know. Probably not, but you might. But look, I just want you to know, I love you, man. And we've always had a good time, eh? Just remember the good times.
I think by this stage, Sid has finally blacked out.
Yeah. And you just, perhaps just as you're passing out, you hear the door closed. The sort of slithering sound. And yeah.
Oh, that went well.
You could make another sanity roll if you want. It's your call.
Yeah, I don't think even all the cheap booze on the island will shield Sid from that. So
yeah.
That's an extreme.
Yeah, that is an extreme sanity roll. You're, I don't know. Tell me how this is not ripping your mind into shards then.
I think it is just a combination of being blackout drunk and passing out at the point at which the realization was beginning to come together that some of this might actually be happening.
Yeah, for sure. So, the next day dawns, another scorchingly hot day in the Mediterranean. And perhaps the incredibly bright, almost white sunlight pouring into all of your windows is enough to bleach away the awful memories of, I guess, of the night before, or the weird dreams, or the strange encounters. Ray, where do you wake up?
Well, I imagine I'm just going to keep going all night until, you know, I possibly collapse just through the amount that I've drunk and just exhaustion, and kind of wake up lying in the woods somewhere, perhaps.
Yeah, maybe you're back in the woods by the beach.
Yeah, possibly ended up back down there.
Yeah, so you wake up with a raging thirst, pounding head, bloodshot eyes. I guess everyone else is not entirely feeling well when they wake up either, but brilliant bright sunlight is bleached away, said the memories of perhaps some of the awfulness of the night before. I think I'd like you all to somehow be together again for the next. So where would you be?
I think, oh, sorry.
So all three of you, in whatever state you're in.
The effects of the sunlight kind of caused us to maybe forget some of the events of the previous night. I would head back and make sure that Angie wasn't somehow lying back in bed, you know.
Mm, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's like that thing where you look for something, you don't find it, and then you can't find it, but you keep going back to that same place.
Mm, yeah.
In case you somehow missed. In the case of missing a wife, I guess that would be hard to imagine, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I'm back at my villa, contemplating my next move. I guess that would be where you would find me, where Trey's.
You're not the sort of person that would be panicking, I think, would you? You'd be like dealt with a lot of shit in your time.
Mm.
I think most people would be panicking at this point, but Ray, you're perhaps not.
I'm just trying to fathom who might be responsible for this, who should be my first port of call. I'm thinking about perhaps the people who dug my pool, maybe paying them a visit, given that their strange behaviour, they might be responsible for this. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, they were definitely giving Angie the eye at one point, weren't they?
And if I've got any idea where they live, especially the big one, I'm going to be paying him a visit.
Mm. Well, I'll tell you what, let's have you do that. I can't imagine even a persuasive Meredith would be able to get you to leave that one alone. But Meredith does do her duty, and perhaps Jack, you're the least, even though you've had some of the weirdest experiences, you're probably the least freaked out at this point, but she has gathered you and perhaps a rather shell-shocked Sid.
Yeah, I think Sid at this stage, I mean, he'll change his clothes before going out, but, you know, he is pale, he's got bloodshot eyes, and you can just smell the booze coming out through his sweat at the moment.
Fantastic. Meredith is all business, as usual. She's brisk, efficient, she has a clipboard. And when you've got a clipboard, anything, you're in control, aren't you?
Yeah.
And she got a driver to pick you both up, and she takes you to the Ersatz Alhambra Palace, overlooking the bay. And you're brought into a scene of relative calm when Trey is sitting at a small table. He has his coffee has been brought to him. He's got the Washington Post that existed in 1920, whatever. He's got the Washington Post sort of neatly ironed. And yeah, that's probably...
I mean, this was just before they broke Watergate, so yeah.
Oh, of course, yeah, this is 1970, isn't it? I think it was the 20s. Right, he's got the Washington Post neatly ironed on a side table. He's got toasted buttered croissants, jam, a neatly ironed napkin. It's all been brought out for him, and he's sitting there, and Meredith brings you in to the dining room that's been set up. And she says, can I get you anything, gentlemen? Toast, croissants, tea or coffee?
Just some water, love.
Water, right, okay.
I'll have some toast and a coffee, please.
Toast and coffee. Very good. And two chairs are brought out for you and put on the other side of the table from Trey.
Jack's, you know, looking at the woodwork around the whole place, you know, from coming in, walking through. And so he's looking at the table that they're sitting at, you know, checking if the legs are equal, if there's any wobbles, and checking for little scratches, new or otherwise, just, you know.
Yeah, there's obviously some beautiful wood carving in the palace, you know. Some of the inlay work is exquisite. Carved birds and roses and things like that across some of the archways.
Nice touches, nice touch.
I mean, some of it has been broken away, wear and tear and neglect over the years, but still beautiful. Trey, you've just finished your third croissant.
Are any of you big readers?
Yeah, I read a fair bit.
Not really.
I never miss a day of Dick Tracy in the Washington Post.
Oh, that's nice.
How are y'all feeling this morning?
Someone ate me and shat me out.
That sounds appropriate. I'm not sure the island weather is agreeing with me terribly at this point. I feel I may have summoned you all here. Is that correct?
Yeah. Why are we here?
I don't remember.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Meredith?
Yes, sir?
Why are they all here?
You asked me to bring them, sir.
What's the purpose? What's the goal?
I believe an offer of employment. As I understand it, you want to set up some new division.
Yes, yeah, you've taken care of the financials, the groundwork. Has it been laid?
Yes, Johnson in New York has already incorporated the new entity.
That bastard, okay.
What's the purpose of this new entity?
If we were transported back to last night, I would have clear and perfect recollection. But I'm not sure at this point. What are your strong points?
Making fucking films.
There we go.
That was it, sir.
There's our pitch. Let's use that.
Yes. You wanted to make a recording, sir. Yes.
Everything that happens must be filmed. Do you have cameras available?
Yeah. I've got a Super 8 camera I can use for shooting some footage. I just seem to be short a director at the moment.
Oh, that's no good. That's no good. Where can we get another director and some better cameras than a goddamn Super 8?
I don't think we're going to get another director, but I don't think we're going to get a better camera on this island. So let's make do with what we've got.
Fair enough.
Meredith pipes up. He says, I'll see if we can reach out to that Pasolini chap.
Do that. That name sounds important and not familiar.
I hear he's at a loose end.
Yeah.
Who else? What else is happening here? The pool boy. The pool man. The man with the pool. Pool boy. Why did I bring him aboard?
Do you mean Mr. Mason, sir?
Yeah, sure.
He said he had some urgent business to attend to. He was carrying a sawn-off shotgun, so I didn't wish to press the point.
That does sound urgent. Best of luck to him. Wanted to make him second in command.
Once a villain, always a villain.
And the carpenter.
Yes?
Yeah, we'll need you. For sets. And, all kinds of other odd jobs. Would you take a position with our crew?
You want me to build some sets?
Or just whatever we need. Carpentry is an endlessly useful profession, don't you think?
I do. I've made it my own. It's endless, really.
I'm generally very frugal, but I want to just throw wads of cash at this endeavor. I think we're onto something here. I think we've tapped into some sort of natural conduit of energy that flows through this island and is taking us to some pinpoint target that's going to be enlightening once we bask in its glow. Does that make sense to anyone else?
It seems like the moment to mention the fact that when I got back to my place last night, I found the guy, this guy I work for sometimes, who had died and came back. He was digging under a tree in my garden.
Any other time I would be quite surprised.
Yeah.
Did I mention we're having a funeral for a small ear this morning?
You did not.
Meredith, has a proper priest been secured? Or whatever the local equivalent would be?
I'm on it, sir. Maybe a little bit delayed.
That's what Meredith says when she's forgotten to do something.
Mr. Trey, you're talking about building sets and getting proper gear from somewhere. Look, that's all great. I like the sound of all that. But what kind of picture are you actually planning on making? Is this, a documentary, some kind of art house experimental bollocks?
I want to capture the truth of this place and this time.
Yeah, that's not an answer.
It's definitely going to be a found footage movie.
Oh, God.
Something's happening here.
What is this? Some kind of cinema verite?
Any other time I would pretend to know what that means and continue speaking, but I'll just ask, what are you talking about?
This is going to be, slice of life stuff filming the people around the island? I mean, you mentioned that twat Pasolini earlier. That's the kind of stuff he does, doesn't he?
No, slice of life, no.
He gets ordinary people and...
This is about death! This is about death and rebirth.
And at this point, Meredith comes over and she just leans in and says, Sir, why don't we go for a little stroll outside? Just take the heat out of this.
Not now, Meredith. I have a question for the gentleman.
I don't want you to overexert yourself, sir. You've been under a lot of strain recently.
Sid, isn't it? Sid?
Yeah, yeah.
Have you not had experiences that seem a bit unnatural to you since you've been on this island? Do you not want to know if it's your mind that's going or if it's the island that's moving us to some other place?
Honestly, at the moment, I really don't.
Well, I do, Sid, and I have a fuck ton of money, and I want to document what is happening here.
And with that, let's cut back to Ray. You've walked about 2 miles. You're sweating, you're grimy, you haven't washed since the day before. The shotgun is feeling heavy and heavier than it should in your hand. And you see this, I suppose, little house up ahead, whitewashed, tiled roof, but in really bad condition. There's tiles missing, there's cracks in the glass of some of the windows. And this is where the foreman lives. You know that.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm filled with a sense of purpose. I'm going to just stroll right on up to the place, look for the way in, and try and find this individual.
So you push the door open. It's probably mid-morning, let's say. Hot already. And you go in, and it's dark and close in the room that you go into. And you see the man, the foreman, this big, hunched figure. And he's sort of leaning forward. He's sitting at his kitchen table. He's got a plate with about 5 big, greasy fried eggs on it. And he's just like forking the eggs into his mouth. And he just looks up at you when you come in. And he just grunts. His eyes briefly flicker down and he sees that you're holding the shotgun. And he just carries on forking the greasy slivers of egg into his mouth. The yolk bursts on one of them and just runs down his unshaven chin. And he just wipes it away with the back of his hand and carries on eating the egg.
I would like to kick the table to one side and just say, "Where's my wife, you miserable piece of shit?"
He sort of starts back in his chair. As you kick the table away, first it sends the plate spinning across the kitchen and the eggs go splattering against the wall and the plate breaks. And he's just left holding a fork with a bit of egg on it, just holding it up in the air. And he looks at you with a sort of sullen expression. And then he just puts the last bit of egg into his mouth and finishes it off. And then drops the fork and he just sits there, puts his hands down either side of him. And he looks up at you and he says, "No hablo inglés, señor."
Can I hit him in the face with the butt of my shotgun?
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Right, well, I do that.
All right. You can make, I guess it's a fighting brawl roll, but given that he's sitting down and he's sort of fairly, not able to really react, I'll give you a bonus die. So hit the purple on your fighting brawl. Yeah, you succeed. Roll a D6. Oh, yeah. How big are you? Are you a big boy? I'm going to kill him. Roll a D4 as well. Wow! 7 damage. You ram the butt of your sawn-off right into his egg-stained face, and you hear this satisfying crunch, and he just kind of rocks backwards in the chair. His head slams against the wall, and then the chair rocks forward again. And he coughs a couple of times, and then he kind of opens his mouth and spits, and about 3 teeth just fall out onto the floor. And then he looks up at you, and he sort of slowly grins and says, "No comprende, señor." And at that moment, you realize that he's been sort of twirling something around in his hand, in his right hand, this whole time. He was eating with his left. And I don't know what, I can only imagine what your reaction is. You see that in his right hand, he's been twisting it around his fingers. That's Angie's necklace he's got in his hand.
Right. I think I've decided that I'm not going to get any sense out of this individual. And I will say, "Comprende this," and shoot him.
Fuck.
I mean, you've never seen this before. You've been in this sort of situation a few times in your life. You know how people behave. He just sits there. He doesn't move. He doesn't reach for a weapon. He doesn't say anything. He doesn't try and duck. He doesn't even flinch as you just put a giant fucking hole in his face. And we'll leave it there.
Well.
Jolly good.
Jolly good. Oof, that was an interesting session.
Mm.